Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, now celebrating their 125th anniversary. From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. It's carnival time in Louisiana. This week, we take you into the secret realm of some of New Orleans' most exclusive Mardi Gras crews. Antoine's Restaurant is one of the great epicenters of private carnival celebrations. Fifth-generation proprietor Rick Blunt takes us on tour of the Rex Room, the Proteus Room, the 12th Night Room, and the Hermes Bar. Then, Mark Ladder of Toujax welcomes us into his Crew d'Etat Room, a place of rollicking misbehavior. And Robin Young, host of NPR's Here and Now, turns the tables on me with an interview about Mardi Gras food. It's not just about king cake. It's all about the purple, green, and gold on this week's Louisiana Eats.
Everybody asks me that all the time. They say, well, you know, well, Rick, you know, is Antoine's a, is this a tourist restaurant? Do people from out of town dine here? Or is this a local restaurant? And I can't figure out a meaningful statistic that makes any sense at all. Again, one of those roles that Antoine's plays in the dynamic of New Orleans is that we're this sort of quintessential New Orleans experience. And so when you're entertaining your out-of-town guests, is this a local dinner or is this an out-of-town dinner? Half the people at the table are local, the other half the people are out of town. So it's very difficult for me to come up with any sort of an idea of who we serve more of. I honestly don't think we serve more of one group or the other. It's just what we do.
Standing in the middle of the Rex Room as lunch is being cleared, Rick Blunt brings up an interesting point about Antoine's restaurant. As guests leave, Rick shakes their hands and knows them all on a first-name basis. Perhaps that's because the French Quarter restaurant has been in his family for five generations. But over that great expanse of time, what has Antoine's become? A tourist destination? A living museum? A playground for the elite? Or a 175-year-old establishment trying to stay relevant while maintaining time-honored tradition? If you ask Rick Blunt, he'll tell you that Antoine's is all of those things. Rick gave us a personal tour of all the Mardi Gras crew rooms at Antoine's. Of course, we began in the room dedicated to the king of carnival himself, Rex. It's decorated in the Mardi Gras colors of purple, green, and gold, with lighted shadow box cases filled with mementos and memorabilia lining the walls. Crowns, scepters, even a Rex Queen's gown shimmers from those cases. So many happy memories.
Rex is the original history. And I love the traditions of Rex. It's so wonderful, the Rexes, the kings that are on this wall,
yes,
are all so interesting because they're not only just the social elite, they're more than that. They're prominent in their own right. So it's not just birthright, it's also their life experience that makes them Rex.
They're the movers and shakers of the city.
They are. And it's so wonderful that just to look at the names of the Rexes are just so interesting. They're every single old New Orleans name is represented here.
So what goes on in this room? What do the members of Rex do in this room?
Well, they have multiple traditions that are here. They do several, Rex themselves do several parties here. They do their king's party here. They do a queen's party here. They do multiple other events during the year here. But it's also a room that's available to Antoine's. It's available to anyone. Like all of the other dining rooms at Antoine's, there's no rhyme or reason why you would have one or the other. It's your preference as a diner. Uh-huh. So anyone can reserve any room. There's no charge. There's no preference. If it's available, I've served many couples for their anniversary, just a party of two in the Rex Room because that's what they wanted to do. So all of these rooms are available to everyone.
Well, I'll tell you a little secret about me in this room. Do you know what I did in this room?
I hate to ask.
I got married on at lunch on a Friday. I actually had my wedding in this room.
Oh, well, that's a pretty benign story. I was getting a little concerned.
Oh, no. I'm an Ursuline girl, just like your mother, Rick. Be good. So tell me, how far back does the association go between Rex and Antoine's?
Back to 1942 was when the room was built. My grandfather, Roy Alciator, agreed to the formation of a Rex room and to put to begin the pieces of it. And of course, it's evolved and grown and so on in scope of how it's worked out. But our association, I think, goes back a lot further than that. I would really say, or I have said, and I think it only makes good sense. One of the roles that Antoine's plays in the community of New Orleans is that it's kind of a place where things happen. You know, you told me that you got married at Antoine's. It wouldn't surprise me at all that the gentleman who formed Rex dined here. You know, people ask me that. Well, when did Rex anoint Antoine's? I would be willing to bet that it happened in the opposite way. I would be willing to bet that the gentlemen that formed Rex were already customers here, and they were already dining here, and they were discussing this grand idea of a Mardi Gras in New Orleans, probably here. And so why did they stay here? Well, it was just natural, because it's where they were anyway.
So where do we go next?
Let's go to Proteus.
Okay.
In the Proteus room, Rick explained that he's challenged the old line crew to bring out their playful spirit while maintaining their focus on history. The Proteus room is a bit more staid and formal than some of the others, befitting Mardi Gras' second oldest parade and crew. Its most imposing feature is a giant Proteus crest, worthy of the god of the seas.
Now, of course, each one of the crews are a different entity and a different animal with different reasons for their organization, different functions in our community, different everything. So all of their traditions are different. And much, much, much about the crews are secret. So I'm not privy to lots of the reasons why they may or may not do things. I mean, these are all just unbelievable organizations that all exist as separate organizations, yet I think that they share an awful lot of membership, mm-hmm. and they share an awful lot of tradition. But Proteus does do a lot of functions here, not necessarily in their royal room, because they certainly couldn't fit the organization mm-hmm. in this room. On Lundi Gras, on Proteus Monday, we host a party for the members of Proteus, and it's about 200 guests. Now, that's not their total membership. That's just the gentlemen that show up for the one party. So 200 people are not going to fit in the Proteus room, no matter what you do. If you stood them on top of each other, they wouldn't fit. But we can fit them in the large annex. And so we do a beautiful sit-down dinner, which is really a fun, you know, a fun day. Proteus Monday is one of the really, really, truly fun days at Antoine's.
Okay, where are we going next?
Well, since we're downstairs, we ought to go to Hermes.
The Hermes room was the last crew room added to Antoine's, and in 2009, it was repurposed as the restaurant's first patron bar. The crew of Hermes loved it, but Rick saw the bar as a chance for Antoine's to evolve.
Because it's so funny, you know, for years people would walk up to it and they'd bump into the trademark and they'd say, wow, we bumped into Antoine's. And then they would ask one of my waiters to take their picture.
Oh.
And then they would move on. Oh. Because there was no way to interact with the business. There was no way to have a memory. There was no way to meet anyone. There was no way to do anything at Antoine's without the bar. And without the Hermes bar, I had no slush fund. I had no way to ask a customer to pardon me for a few minutes or anything else. So it was important to me to do that. And then secondly, it was important for me to sort of stodgy down the image of Antoine's. Once inside Antoine's, I think people let their hair down, but not on their way in. I think the tradition of being very, very formal had run too much of its course. And we were seen as being too fancy for our own good.
Or perhaps Grandma and Grandpa's restaurant not some place that the 20 or 30 somethings would necessarily be willing to go.
Exactly. Very, very much to the point. My daughter at a very young age, maybe 15 years old, had really candid discussions with me and said, you know, Dad, you know, my friends would never go to Antoine's, you know, on their own nickel because, you know, who wants to be boring? You know, who wants to be formal? And so it was like, wow, what a bad perception. What a and truly a wrong perception. Because if anything, Antoine's is this celebratory place that's always been incredibly fun. You know, it was never the formal of a joint. It was even throughout its entire history, it's been this sort of a European French bistro environment, not this formal environment. But I don't know that I could have convinced
my daughter
and her friends of that, because what they saw was this formality that got in the way with having fun.
Okay, where do you want us to go now?
You want to go 12th Night?
Sure.
Are you
absolutely
on?
12th Night.
Come on, we'll go up the back stairs.
As we made our way upstairs to the 12th Night Revelers Room, it struck me that Rick's constantly juggling innovation and tradition. Antoine's is so many things to so many different people, and all of them have their own expectations that go with it. Not only is Rick expected to uphold those traditions, but he's also tasked with making the restaurant accessible for younger generations of patrons. It can be a challenge, especially when he goes over the annual Mardi Gras menus with the crews.
I don't think the Mardi Gras crews in general go out on a limb very far. You know, they're members are expecting this sort of classic Antoine's meal. And although every year we have many meetings about the menu and how we're going to serve it and all that stuff, at least up until now, we haven't gone that far out on a limb for that. So,
well, honestly, I think that people come to Antoine's and expect to have their favorite Antoine's meal.
Yeah. Sometimes I worry about them, though, a little bit, because many, many times I'll see the same group of gentlemen 5, 6, 7 times in a 3-week period. I don't know. I love a filet with Marchand de Vin sauce. You know, I mean, I think that is a classic, classic dish. It's wonderful. But after 7 of them, I might be looking to order something different. Yeah, you know what I mean? So every year I do talk to the crews and ask them to think about varying up our menus just a little bit so that it stays exciting and fun and interesting to their guests, because we want that to be an exciting experience and a fun, you know, way to do dinner. And honestly, the history of Mardi Gras is written by these crews, and it's written by the people who participate in these crews. Antoine's is just the supporting cast. We don't generate the history. We're just here to help support it.
Rick Blunt, fifth generation proprietor and CEO of Antoine's Restaurant.
In a house, in a square, in a quadrant, in the street, in the lane, in the road, turn to the left, on the right hand, you see there is my true love's abode.
In a city where it's not unusual to dine in century-old establishments, Toujac's restaurant holds a special place. Different from Antoine's, Toujac's is a decidedly neighborhood eatery located in America's oldest neighborhood, New Orleans French Quarter. Founded in 1856 by Guillaume Toujac, it's officially the second oldest restaurant in the city. Like Antoine's, they have their own crew room, too. Owner and proprietor Mark Ladder tells us the story of how the Crew d'Etat room came to be.
So they were having a dictators meeting in Antoine's in the Proteus room, and they decided they wanted their own room. They had known my father, Stephen, for years, and some of the previous dictators, and they're like, let's go to Toujac's. And so they came to Toujac's, they talked to my father, and it was done. Now they have the Crew d'Etat room at Toujac's restaurant.
And this isn't a very old crew. About how long have they been around?
They formed in 1996.
In 1996.
So they're just a baby.
Well, they're just babies, but the truth be told, even though, you know, these crews have such secrecy and, you know, the maskers on the floats, they have to keep their masks on. And even at the Mardi Gras balls, when you dance with a masker, theoretically, you're not supposed to know who that is who gives you the Mardi Gras ball favor. The truth is, that, or it's rumored that a lot of the Crew d'Etat members are actually families that previously belonged to some of the really old Mardi Gras crews that don't parade anymore, like Comus, for instance.
I would think so. There's a lot of the members of Crew d'Etat are very much involved in the city of New Orleans.
Big Mardi Gras folks, huh? So your father said yes, and they began to have their events here. What are the events that go on?
So they started with a small room by the balcony upstairs, and they would just have float meetings. And then once my father passed away and we decided to renovate the upstairs, they decided they wanted our big room so they could have their dictatorship meetings here. We pretty much gutted the room, and then they decorated themselves. Their logos everywhere. They have brand new tile on the fireplace. They even have a shadow box with a lot of the giveaways and pins and other things that involve the crew. So the entire room is decorated by the crew.
Do you expect the crews to expand here, or have other people approached you?
Other crews have approached us about other rooms. I guess they get the idea from Antoine's and then coming into the Crew d'Etat room. But we've limited it just to the Crew d'Etat room.
So what goes on at these dictator dinners?
So the dictator meetings are pretty mysterious. Basically, they come upstairs, everyone grabs a cocktail, and then they ask our staff and all members of Two Jacks to go downstairs. They have like a secret ceremony where they sacrifice a lamb or something. And then about an hour into their dictator's meeting, they allow staff to come back upstairs. They have dinner and more cocktails.
I hear that sometimes there are some ladies who attend these events.
I don't ever recall seeing the ladies come upstairs, but, you know, there's rumors that, you know, they come through the back stairs.
I see. And I hear that some of these women could be scantily clad and perhaps perform.
I have no recollection of any of that happening. These are tame, distinguished gentlemen having a drink for dinner and dinner.
Do they have any sort of dining and drinking ritual? What do they want when they come to Two Jacks?
So they want the old traditional menu that my father had at the restaurant, the five-course meal, and they really enjoy the chicken bonfim. Basically, they have the remoulade, the gumbo, the brisket appetizer, and then everybody gets garlic chicken.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yummy. It's so delicious. And nobody wants to kiss you too much after you have the chicken bonfim. You have to bring a little piece home to your wife or something, I think. Mark, what does it mean to you personally to have this crew have such an affinity and an attachment to your restaurant?
It means a lot to me because I guess I have a lot of friends and neighbors that are involved in Crew d'Etat, and it's so it sits close to home, and it's fun to know that you have, you know, this crew. They talk about us as much as we talk about them. You know, go check out the Crew d'Etat room at Two Jacks. We'll have people come in from out of town. My uncle's in Crew d'Etat. Can I see the room upstairs?
So the room stays the same all year round, huh?
All year round. Christmas Day, rehearsal dinners, weddings. It's become an attraction, so we definitely want to keep the room looking the way it does now.
Well, there's a lot of very beautiful and entertaining things to see in here. And, of course, every year they put out those parade flyers that tell the name of every float. And you look at one of those, they're all hanging all over the walls here, and you can really get their sense of humor. They're so satirical, often very political, taking jabs at no one is exempt from that, are they?
No, not at all. If there are two parades that I would suggest someone from out of town coming to watch, it's not the big guys in Damien and Bacchus. It's Crew de Vue and Crew d'Etat, because they'll teach you the most about the city of New Orleans, what's going on at that moment in New Orleans.
Well, I am so thrilled that you welcomed us into the Crew d'Etat room here at Two Jacks Restaurant, and we'll be coming back. I know there's a lot more things that our Louisiana Eats listeners can learn about the history and the wonderful special place that Two Jacks is here on the corner of Madison and Decatur Street. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Poppy. Great to see you.
Mark Ladder of Two Jacks Restaurant.
Spread a little bit of that Mardi Gras jam.
When we come back, we're going to Cajun country to hear how they celebrate Mardi Gras. Of course, there's gumbo involved. Don't go anywhere. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's. In sharp contrast to the elaborate parades and crews of New Orleans, Mardi Gras Day in Cajun country is altogether different. There are still costumes and great food, but it's like nothing you'll see in the city. Cultural correspondents Toby Rodriguez and Lucius Fontenot let us in on their Acadian traditions.
So out here in the prairies and the area outside of New Orleans, we have the Courier de Mardi Gras, which is a horseback Mardi Gras, where people participate as opposed to watching parades. And the whole idea behind it is community. Once again, it's very important around here. Masked riders get up at dawn, gather together, and go out on horseback or walk and collect ingredients for a communal gumbo at the end of the day. And every neighbor that we stop at, as a show of appreciation for their donation to this gumbo, will either, you know, do some tricks, or
we cut some flips.
And it's just all this revelry. And I think something that people hear about is the chicken chasing part of it, which is always a fun thing. The farmer or neighbor will give you a live chicken and say, you're welcome to have this, but you must catch it first. And there's a dance at the end of the day with a gumbo, and everyone celebrates and has their last hurrah just before Lent.
We're fortunate that some of the older people in our immediate community that don't run anymore have taken on the obligation of cooking our gumbo. The thing is that, like, these revelers from this community go from door to door, go to the different voisins, the different neighbors, and receive donations for the gumbo. Mm-hmm. So the gumbo traditionally wouldn't have been started till after the Mardi Gras got back to that home position. But, you know, because there's like 500 hungry, drunk people that really need a bowl of gumbo.
That's a lot of gumbo.
That gumbo started early that morning by these older guys who have taken on that role. There's definitely a lot of community at that point. The major difference between New Orleans and the Cajun country Mardi Gras, which I love to go to Mardi Gras in New Orleans, but that's a spectator sport. And here, it's participation. There is no one, like, standing on side of the road watching us pass. Like, we are the parade. And the understanding behind Mardi Gras is that you have a day to be anonymous. You have a day to be something that you can't be the rest of the year. You get to be mischievous or canaille and get away with some things that, you know, sociably, maybe you couldn't get away with. You know, you get to act out of yourself. And I know for me personally, I become a really, really mean person Mardi Gras Day. And I would like to think that most people wouldn't think I was a mean guy most of the time. But on that day, I get to shed all that negative stuff.
And it's all behind a costume.
Costumes differ. Traditional costumes, the headpiece is a capuchon. There's a screen mask. You know, they're very multicolored. It's supposed to contrast. Mardi Gras is all about contrast. At that time of the year, you've got, you know, some nice silver gray skies. There's no leaves on the trees just yet. A lot of dead winter grass. So it's a very dull palette, and these costumes contrast that palette. They're very colorful. They're filled with fringes. The traditional costume designs are basically set to mock the authority figures. So you have the capuchon, which mocks royalty. You know, the old Duchess dunce-looking cap was worn by royalty, you know, in more, I guess, more pagan days, and that has actually been transferred over to us. And so you're mocking royalty in wearing that. But there's also, like, the bishop's mitre.
Yes.
Is pretty popular. And then there's the what the professor wears. That's another common. But you could also, you could mock just about anyone, you know. We've had people dressed up as presidents sometimes. The most important thing is that you have to know what that run is going to expect out of you. Some runs don't care about being completely disguised the entire time.
And the customs and the traditions of the run differ by neighborhood.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Give me some examples.
Let me see. What can I divulge?
Is it like a secret society too?
Well, it is some like things about those runs that are kept secret. You have to run it to experience it. Uh-huh. There are some runs that have an initiation, like a hazing that goes on before the run for new runners. There are some runs that don't allow women. There are some runs that are co-ed. There are some runs that are just strictly women. Some runs that have a traditional costume that is expected of you and that everyone wears that style costume, where other runs are a little bit more tolerable. They accept just about anything. If you run our run, I'd only have one bit of advice, and it's put on your mask.
Yes, indeed. You know, that's the law. Put your mask on.
Absolutely. And go ahead and dance with your id.
Alola Mardi Gras.
That was Toby Rodriguez and Lucius Fontenot, men who live out their cultural roots. With its colorful history and delectable taste, there's no food that gets to the heart of carnival season quite like king cake. Bakeries across Louisiana supply residents and revelers with king cake from Twelfth Night right on through Mardi Gras. Many have developed their own unique spin on the king cake tradition. One such bakery is Cake Cafe, located in New Orleans' Marigny neighborhood. Our engineer, Joe Schreiner, sent us this postcard.
My name is Steve Himmelfarb, owner of the New Orleans Cake Cafe and Bakery. We do a number of different king cakes. We do these mini king cakes, which I'm setting up right now. These are the apple gochis. We also do a raspberry cream cheese. Then we do this mini king cake for Aunt Sally's pralines. In the process of doing these mini king cakes, I mislabeled the Aunt Sally's apple goat cheese. So I have to write apple goat cheese really on ours so that when they go to be iced, they know, wait a minute, these are apple goat cheese. That's the kind of thing that happens at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I got here about 1:45. It takes about a solid hour for the ovens to warm up, so that's a good time to get everything set up. We roll the doughs out the night ahead of time, so that when I come in, we have sheets of dough in the cooler that are ready to be worked with. So that's where these are right now. They're still pretty, they're kind of cold. So, but I'm gonna start making our raspberry cream cheese, large ones. We opened in 07, right at the beginning of September. So I've been making king cakes since before then. The first thing I ever really wanted to do was make sure it had the drizzle icing on it, because I really wanted to express the creativity and the boldness and the fun of Mardi Gras, and just really wanted it to be a piece of art. King cake is a real calling card for a bakery. And I really wanted to do something totally unique and something special that wasn't over the top. It was just real. there's the apple goat cheese, raspberry cream cheese. Those are the two biggest sellers by far. And then there's pecan with cream cheese and brown sugar and cream cheese and traditional. And it's really important to have a good traditional king cake because you can't lose track of the tradition. You can't lose track of the foundation that it's built on. So I take the dough and twist it around a little bit so the filling will hopefully stay in. And we'll get ready and put these in the oven in a minute.
I'm Becky Himmelfarb, I'm Steve's wife, and I am right now mixing icing that I am going to use to decorate our king cakes. Before you put icing on anything, you have to work the icing. It's been refrigerated, so when Steve comes in, he takes it out so that it can be at room temperature when I get here, and then I can put it in the mixer and work it, which is much easier than when I used to work it by hand. So I guess, you know, not everything about the Industrial Revolution was bad. Although the mixer's been one of the few things that made me say that. This is our green. As you can see, it's a very bright, I call this Mardi Gras green. You know, I don't have the baking background my husband has. I just have the New Orleans background. So I draw on my childhood and I look at that and say, yes, Mardi Gras green, that one's ready to go. These are the finished cakes that have come out of the oven, and you can see they have some extra flour on the top. So then I just brush that off. And then you take it off. The ends are always where it sticks the most, but you have to work your way around and then move it onto the board. Oh, I don't like this board. It's a little messed up. So I'll just recycle that. You know, these are special. You don't want to treat them that way. The details count. So I'm just putting a little tiny bit of stuff in here that will help the icing set. Because, you know, you're looking at it and you see purple, green, and gold, and it looks like three different things, but actually it's all the same icing, so there's no reason for it not to all run together. So I'm going through and I'm laying the icing on the cake. I'm doing the purple first. Those were a little skinny, so I'm just going back over them. This is a little bit thick. I'm probably going to thin it out a little bit. We try to get all the way around with one spoonful if possible.
Mardi Gras music on.
I know.
We listen to Mardi Gras music every morning when we do our cooking.
I'm going to shuffle. Okay, and here's my mix. We usually start with Louis Armstrong. You know what, the only other thing really for me to tell you about is the babies. We have our bucket o' babies. We open that and that has all the babies in it. Traditionally, the baby used to be baked into the king cake. Tourism became a much bigger business in New Orleans. So by the early 90s, you had tourists regularly eating king cake. In New Orleans, a five-year-old would know to look for the baby. But adult tourists were choking on babies, so most people stopped putting them in. We like to put it on top. We put it right there in the crevasse where the ends meet after we have it all decorated. And then we tell people, you know, if you want to put it inside, follow the tradition, which we like to do. You just lift up one little spot and stick it in underneath. The cake is soft enough, you're going to be able to stick it right in.
Boy, grab your coat, grab your hat, leave worries on those steps. Just direct your feet on sunny side of the street. Can't you hear that pitter-pat? Yes, happy tune, your step, baby. Life can be so sweet on sunny side of the street.
Why are the sugar decorations on a king cake always purple, green, and gold? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back.
Never have a cent. I'll be rich as Rockefeller. No, sir. Gold dust at my feet on sunny dancing.
I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Rouse's Markets. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. Why are the sugar decorations on a king cake always purple, green, and gold? Rex, the king of carnival, selected the official Mardi Gras colors in 1872 to honor the visiting Russian Grand Duke Alexis Alexandrovich Romanov, whose house colors were purple, green, and gold. Purple represents justice, green represents faith, and gold represents power. Personally, if a king cake isn't topped with that crunchy purple, green, and gold sugar, I don't want it. And for goodness sake, don't give me an out-of-season king cake decorated with, for instance, the Saints' colors of gold and black? Black sugar? Why? That borders on heresy. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats.
Got my ticket in my hand. I want to go to Mardi Gras. When I get down there, I want to see that Zulu King.
Whether you live on a parade route or not, it's likely that you'll be faced with feeding a hungry party crowd during carnival season. My go-to dish for feeding a big crowd hails from Cleveland, Ohio. It's Sanford Hertzkovitz brisket, and it is so good it earned him the title of Mr. Brisket. Years ago, I caught Mr. Brisket preparing his specialty on a morning television show. Since then, Mr. Brisket's brisket has become a Mardi Gras tradition at my house. The secret? 3 simple ingredients, a packet of dried onion soup mix, a bottle of chili sauce, and a can of Coke. Mix them all together, then pour the marinade over a trimmed 3 to 4 pound brisket in a deep roasting pan. Marinate overnight or longer, then cover the pan tightly with aluminum foil and stick it in a 275 degree oven before you head out to the parade route. When you come back, up to 4 hours later, there'll be an intoxicating scent in the air and a perfectly cooked brisket in the oven. I slice the brisket and serve it with onion buns and coleslaw. Or sometimes I throw carrots and potatoes in the pan for a sit-down dinner. You'll thank me for this one. Oh, and thank you, Mr. Brisket. For a copy of this recipe, visit the Louisiana Eats website at itsneworleans.com or at wwno.org. I'm Poppy Tooker, and Mr. Brisket's Brisket is real Louisiana Eats. Host of NPR's Here and Now, Robin Young, is a real Mardi Gras amateur. To help her get the carnival story straight, she called me.
The city famous for celebrating Mardi Gras, or Fat Tuesday, is getting ready for another one the day before Lent, next Tuesday.
Going back home, see my name, and never more will I roam. Gonna get my fill of that 8-2-5, cause you are honest in my home.
A little Dr. John to set the mood, which is what New Orleanians are doing right now. They're eating king cakes, dressing up for fancy balls, getting ready to make their brandy milk punch. Poppy Tooker is a native New Orleanian and host of the public radio program Louisiana Eats. She joins us from WWNO in New Orleans. Poppy, welcome, and we are so jealous of you.
You should be jealous, because I live in New Orleans where everybody wants to live.
Well, and eats. Describe a king cake. Someone brought it into the office here. And at first glance, from a distance, I thought it was mold on the cake.
Oh, no.
But it's not. Describe it.
No, not at all. There's 2 distinct kinds of king cake. There's the traditional one that came from France, which is called the Gâteau du Roi. And it is a puff pastry, round, looks pretty tame. But a New Orleans-style king cake is usually crescent-shaped and covered with crunchy purple, green, and gold sugar, and nowadays often filled with only God knows what.
Purple, green, gold?
Purple, green, and gold. Those are the colors of Mardi Gras.
There you go. Well, and what's the basis of the cake?
It's sort of a brioche sort of a dough. Sometimes it's braided, sometimes it's not. When I was a child, we only had one kind of king cake, and it was a pretty basic brioche dough, a little cinnamon flavor, no fillings, and that crunchy. That's what I still really love is when you take a bite of the king cake and you get that crunch of the sugar between your teeth. There's something really yummy there.
The thing I thought was mold was not. It was delicious.
No.
Well, why king cake? Why is it called that? Why have it?
Well, it's a tradition that began in France. And in France, those poor folks only eat king cake on January 6th, which is King's Day, the Epiphany. Mm. You know, French Catholics in France, French Catholics in New Orleans were all the same. When it came to New Orleans, it got a life of its own. And by the late 1800s, there were Mardi Gras balls. In particular, on January 6th, the season kicks off with Twelfth Night. And it's a big debutante, fancy ball where there's girls who all get a slice of cake, and one of them gets the gold bean, and she's the queen for the night.
Whoa, gold bean. remind us what the gold bean is.
Well, that's a favor. That indicates, you know, it's funny. It evolved from the gold bean to, by the late 40s, early 50s, there were these little porcelain baby dolls that were coming from occupied Japan, and they represented the baby Jesus. So you got the baby doll, you had to buy the next king cake, began the tradition, or have the next king cake party. And of course, time rolls on, the baby turns into plastic, and nowadays king cakes have taken such a life of their own that one of my favorite places, Cochon Butcher, they make the Elvis king cake, which, of course, is marshmallow fluff, peanut butter, bananas. And instead of a baby, they have a little rubber baby pig.
Oh, jeez. Well, hopefully, whether it's the baby Jesus or the pig, you don't bite into it and choke on it when you're eating
a
king
cake.
Well,
you know, that's just a bunch of foolishness, Robin. I'm going to tell you what, okay? Because in recent times, they've stopped baking the favor into the king cake because of a choking hazard. Sometimes I think there's too much litigation.
Oh, I was kidding. I was kidding, but...
No, that's pretty serious these days. There's a huge debate. It was in the Wall Street Journal. Why is there no baby in the king cake?
Well, because of lawsuits. Okay. Or the fear of lawsuits. Well, so there's the king cake. And we've only started to touch on what's happening. You talked about the balls. What other kind of food is prepared for Mardi Gras?
Well, there's a great deal of casual Mardi Gras that goes on that doesn't have to do with elbow-length kid gloves and long dresses. There are parades that happen all over the city where people have these outdoor picnics on the medians that we call neutral grounds. And you can walk up and down the medians and you'll see fried chicken. You'll see whole pigs, cochon de lait, on spits, turning on barbecue pits, huge cauldrons of cast iron filled with jambalaya, and lots of cocktails.
Well, tell us about the brandy milk punch.
Well, you know, this is the breakfast of champions. On Mardi Gras Day, we begin the day 7 a.m. or so. We're looking for Rex, the king of carnival, to come up St. Charles Avenue. And to prepare for that, we have a brandy milk punch. It's in just your plastic gallon milk carton, but you can shake it up and pour it into plastic cups because, you know, we can drink outside in New Orleans. And we toast Rex and we have a delicious deviled egg, and that's how we start the day on Mardi Gras Day.
Deviled eggs cut across the middle. But the brandy,
that's right.
Yeah, the brandy milk punch, brandy milk, powdered sugar, a little vanilla.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of brandy. And the powdered sugar is one of my secrets to it because you shake it up and it gives the drink a little body. So it'll have a head, just like it was a fine cocktail served to you in a bar.
Is it true that cocktails were invented in New Orleans?
It is absolutely true. They were invented by an apothecary who came here from Haiti, and his name was Antoine Amédée Péchaud. He invented Péchaud's bitters. And that's even how the drink gets its name, because he would serve, you know, after a rough night out, his patrons would come to the apothecary. He'd give them a little brandy and a little of his bitters in a coquetier, which is the French word for that egg cup, that double-sided egg cup that looks much like a two-sided jigger that you'll see on a bar today.
Huh.
And so they would have that little shot and go off feeling better in their stomach. But the Americans, who were very resistant to speaking French, they couldn't say coquetier, so they turned it into cocktail. Eventually, it became cocktail, and
that.
The drink was invented here.
Well, look at that. Poppy Tooker, you're filled with so much information, but as we look at Mardi Gras approaching, and we are not lucky enough to be there, just give us some more tips on cooking New Orleans style. You say gumbo, never put fish, just shellfish?
No fish in gumbo.
Oh,
I couldn't believe that. No,
you
can put almost anything in gumbo, but I have to tell you, I've never seen fin fish.
Oh.
You can put shrimp and crabs. Often there's pork sausage, beef sausage, smoked sausage, ham hocks, pickled pork tips. Almost anything can go in a gumbo, and the more the better. It's a hearty meal, and, you know, we're looking for a big meaty meal before that fasting starts on Ash Wednesday.
And Lent. You say if you go and haven't got your cooking equipment with you, McCarty's can fry 100 pieces of fried chicken in an hour for each individual.
It is the most amazing thing. You know, there's a single store, of course, you know, in New Orleans. We all love our Popeye's chicken, and you'll see those boxes up and down the parade route. But for those in the know, there's McCarty's Fried Chicken on North Broad, where you place a phone call, and you walk out with 100-150 pieces of perfectly fried hot chicken. And I'm not even going to tell you how cheap it is, because I don't want to make everybody jealous.
And that's where people in the know in New Orleans go. Poppy Tooker, again, a native New Orleanian, host of the public radio program Louisiana Eats, talking about how New Orleans is going to be eating at Mardi Gras. Poppy, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin. Happy Mardi Gras.
Same to you. Let the good times roll.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
There you go. Okay.
Get some love and that gon' satisfy all my New Orleans. That's Robin Young of the NPR radio show Here and Now, turning the tables by interviewing me. No, Robin, that's not mold on your king cake. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, we ring in the Chinese New Year with a Baijiu toast.
Baijiu is literally white liquor, but it means connection. It means getting to know people. Whenever you have a holiday meal or a business meeting, you always have a bottle of Baijiu on the table.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Rouse's Markets, and Zatarain's. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by Dickie Brennan and Company. Our media sponsor is Louisiana Life Magazine, the magazine of a great state. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to our production team, Thomas Walsh, Joe Schreiner, and Chris Kehoe. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO and the University of New Orleans.